dull. So I came back to New York very much excited, and by this time the buildup had got to the place where we had one of the greatest religious developers, one of the greatest medical developments of all time, you see. Only about 40 drunks at the time. Nobody's sure keeping sober, but you know how enthusiasm can run among us. We're grandiose. So I went back to New York all full of enthusiasm. And I started canvassing people who had money, telling them about this great pending development in which they could participate. Well, you know, I was a salesman, and you know I couldn't raise one dime for drunks. Not a dime could you raise for drunks. Nobody wanted drunks or any part of drunks. And he said, well, why don't you give your money to the Red Cross, the TB League? For drunks, I mean, that's scraping it up, and besides, none of them ever got well. Well, it was very discouraging, and one day, I was in my brother-in-law's office. He's a physician, but he's one in the family anyway. He wasn't a drunk. And I was bemoaning our fate, and I'd got very depressed by this time. I have my ups and downs. As I told you, I'm in the screwball fringe of AA, and I was very depressed and also suffering from imaginary ulcers of the stomach, and things were getting very low. And I said, well, it's terrible the way these financiers take no interest in drugs. Well, now, he said, I got an idea. He said, I share my office with Shirley Wynn here. He's the health commissioner in New York, or was. He said, let's go in and talk Shirley about this. So I went in and temporarily got steamed up and gave Shirley my pep talk, you know, about this marvelous oncoming development here. And, well, now, that fellow listened with a very sympathetic ear. And he said, well, now, he said the Rockefeller Foundation might be just the thing for you. He said, I don't know if the foundation would be the thing. They wouldn't quite pigeonhole it. He said, I don't think those fellows over there quite get the idea. He said, they feel kind of poor, you know. There's been a depression. Well, I said, Doctor, we wouldn't need very much. No, said he, I got the best idea yet. He said, the man you want to see is Mr. John D. Rockefeller. Well, I said, Doctor, how about the Prince of Wales? Then came one of those providential turning points. Ah, on what little event do our lives sometimes turn? My brother-in-law stood by, and he was scratching his head and said, you know, I used to know a girl in high school, and I think he had an uncle, and I think his name was Richardson, and I believe that somehow he was rather close friend to Rockefellers and somehow tied up with their charitable enterprises, and I don't even know if that old gentleman is alive. But he said, how would you like me to call up over there, just call up the Rockefeller offices and see if they know such a man, Mr. W.C. Richardson? Well, I said, that would just be fine. Didn't sound like a very big probability to me, everything considered, though. So he called up. And bang, on the other end of the wire came the old man's voice. Why, Leonard, where have you been? I haven't seen you all these years. Well, my brother-in-law is a very brusque and kind of an abrupt fellow. And he said, well, he said, I've got a relative here that's been fussing around with alcoholics. And I think he's got quite a number of fixed. We'd like to come over and talk to you about it. Gee, I was jittering. I thought he'd get him all discouraged. No, the old man took him right over. So we go up in the elevator to room 5600, which was Mr. Rockefeller's private offices, and we walked straight in, and my brother-in-law saw a fellow in the hall, and he said, I hear you're going to see Mr. Richardson. If you want anything of Mr. Rockefeller, that's the fellow to see. And so we walked right straight in on a dear old family friend of Mr. John D. Rockefeller. Just like that. Oh, I thought, now our troubles are over. My Lord, we got the truck back right up. This is just going to hit John D. on every... I mean, he'll just love this. I mean, it's sociology, and it's medicine, and it's religion, and it's alcohol, all in one package. It'll just be a thing. Well, Mr. Richardson turned out to be a very kindly but very shrewd old man, and I told the story, and he said, how would you like to come back and have lunch with me? Well, I'd be delighted. So I go back in a week and I have lunch with him. And he hears about it some more. And he said, do you mind talking to some of my other friends about this? And I said, certainly not. And so he said, well, I'll get a little gathering together and you bring in some of the local drinkers, the alcoholics, and we'll talk things over. So on a winter's evening in 1937, up in Mr. Rockefeller's boardroom, we had this meeting, which consisted of three or four of the local New York drunks and a few Akronites, and these friends of Mr. Rockefeller. Well, we each told our story of recovery and regeneration, and at the head of the table, as chairman of the meeting, there was Mr. Albert Scott, then chairman of the Riverside Church in New York. And after we told the stories, I very gingerly led around to the subject of money. And we allowed that we had to have a book and we probably had to have some people subsidized. But Mr. Scott said, I can appreciate your need, but are you terribly sure about that? Are you terribly sure you need all this money and you need paid workers? He said, isn't this a work of goodwill which has gone just from one person to another? Not a cent of money involved? Your very power lies in that fact, perhaps. Shouldn't you be terribly careful this thing is never professionalized? Well, we admitted that we'd had such thoughts. Yes? We were fearful, but on the other hand, we were fearful of not doing enough, too. Surely we needed a book. And surely one or two of us, of which I hope one would be me, although I didn't say that, really had to, you know, get fixed up to worry this thing along. Well, the other people there were very deeply impressed, and one of them volunteered to go out to Akron. And Dr. Bob was the hardest up then. He was just about to lose a house, and being a surgeon, even though he had got sober, no patients were interested to be cut up by him yet. And he was really having a bad time. So the Akron was the typical community, and he'd done rather better. The first group was actually started there. So this friend of the Rockefellers goes out, and he comes back, and he makes a report. And its contents recommended $50,000 and a rest center in Akron. And we were overjoyed. We heard about the contents of the report. And the report, synopsis was made, and Mr. Richardson handed it to Mr. Rockefeller. Well, I'd never heard precisely what transpired, but this was the gist of it. Another very providential thing for Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, how many times, how very many times, have circumstances and people mysteriously molded the course of this thing. People would call me the founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, or Smith, or any one of the 20 of us. No. Here were my desires. I was hungry. I wanted to eat. Here were friends of Mr. Rockefeller who agreed that we should have plant and property and professional people, at least in moderation. And yet, here was Mr. Rockefeller, whose every interest was touched by this thing. And when that thing was put on his desk, he looked at it, and I understand that his first words were, like Mr. Scott, aren't you afraid of professionalizing this thing? Shouldn't we go very, very slow? That was a great day for Alcoholics Anonymous. As Mr. Rockefeller had done for us, as he has done for hundreds of other things, we would have gone professional right then and there. We would have been talking about therapists, plants, and property. But somehow that man had the divine wisdom in our case not to do it. And a little bit of a fund was set up, out of which Smithy and I drew about $30 a week, and that was all. Now, then, Mr. Rockefeller, as you know, has the habit of saying to his friends that if they think the thing is good, let them go ahead and raise the money.